Please silence all electronic devices.
I think this second chance to go back and fix your ballot, I'm very skeptical of that.
It's been happening this way for years. It's why African American people find themselves having to have the talk with their children.
I agree with Rob. We do need to have reforms. We need to have the rules and regulations clear. And when there are violations of that, the process needs to be transparent.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the northern reaches of Wake County, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Another summer Friday, another chance to get caught up on some of what happened in state politics this week. Here for our conversation, as almost always, are Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hey,
happy Friday.
Hey there.
We're recording early Friday afternoon. Governor Cooper announced that phase two of the state's reopening plan will extend another 5 weeks until at least September 11th. Meanwhile, in an interview with the Associated Press, Cooper directed a seldom-used critical tone at President Donald Trump and Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. That's his opponent in the gubernatorial election this fall. Cooper said the administration still doesn't have an adequate federal response to the virus, and he took issue at Forrest holding in-person, maskless events. Becky, were any of the governor's criticisms unfair? And if so, which ones?
I don't know that it's unfair. I don't think they were surprising at all. You know, as we get closer to November, I think we're going to see Governor Cooper make more attacks at President Trump. I think it's kind of interesting. Well, actually, I think maybe his criticism of Trump was a little bit unfair in that he himself and Mandy Cohen have used many of the guidelines that have been issued by the White House and by the federal government, by President Trump, in making his decisions about shutdowns and restrictions and other things here in North Carolina. I think the criticism about the mask wearing of Dan Forrest in these campaign events and all this is not unexpected. I mean, the governor has been pretty adamant about the importance of wearing masks, and that's been part of, you know, the 3 W's and all that stuff that, you know, we've heard for months. The fact that he is critical of other public figures who are not wearing the mask, I don't think is surprising at all.
Well, I would just say that I thought his criticisms were obviously right on point. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that the national response to the pandemic has been an utter disaster. And the fact that Cooper has tried to make use of some of the skeletal guidelines that have come out of the Trump administration is no saving grace for the Trump administration. They've clearly botched this. It's one of the greatest American tragedies in American history that where we are now, and we've fallen so far behind other nations in responding. And as for the mask wearing, my goodness, I'm not sure what Dan Forrest would expect. I mean, I really think he has put himself in an almost impossible situation in the election when he came out and said that masks do not help in controlling the virus, and then has gone on to engage in this kind of behavior that public health officials everywhere, even the president, are saying is irresponsible. I can't imagine he wouldn't have expected to get some of those criticisms. So Forrest is in a tough spot.
Well, I think along the mask thing, too, I mean, you know, the governor saw firsthand the criticism and the public ridicule that happens when you appear in public without a mask. You know, the photograph of him outside the mansion walking with protesters with his mask hanging off his ear has gotten widespread criticism as well. So I think you kind of have to be careful with these things, you know, being critical of someone for doing what you have done. And, you know, we've seen that it does get a tremendous amount of attention when that is the case with the mask wearing.
But Becky, you would concede that there is a difference between walking outside of the executive mansion with some protesters with a mask hanging over one's ear and holding multiple events with dozens and dozens, if not more than 100, triple digits.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's the consistency of it.
Okay. Let's move on. A disturbing video was released by Forsyth County officials Wednesday. In it, John Neville is heard saying, "I can't breathe," at least 28 times, 28 times, while being restrained by sheriff deputies. Neville died at a local hospital in December of last year following the incident. The Forsyth County Sheriff's Office did not publicly acknowledge the death for 7 months and only released video after a state judge ordered it to do so. The restraint used on Neville remains permissible. What reform should be implemented? And is there anything the state can do? Rob, let's start with you.
Well, I think we probably need comprehensive statewide legislation to make directives to our law enforcement agencies in this state that would reform the way they do their business. We need comprehensive reform of the way we enforce the laws of our state and our nation, tragically. Law enforcement, despite the best intentions in many instances and the good intentions of many officers, is simply out of control. And it is an especially noteworthy and egregious situation that this consistently seems to happen to people of color. We just had a case in Colorado this week, I believe it was, where a whole family was handcuffed in a mistaken identity thing. These things don't, for some reason, don't seem to happen to white individuals nearly as much. And it's understandable. I mean, that's given rise to this entire movement across the country in which people are finally coming to the realization that it's in effect been a crime in this country for decades, if not centuries, to be a person of color. And they simply have been treated differently. And we have got to change that. And it's not surprising that people are outraged by this and calling for fundamental change in the way we enforce our laws. This is just an ongoing disaster. And this is just a horrific tragedy out of Forsyth County that needs to be addressed.
Well, I think, number one, I think this is a great illustration of why transparency is important. Sunshine is the greatest cleanser of things. And so to have this video released and just to see what's happening, that it can be addressed and the problems can be addressed, I think it is a terrible, as we've alluded to, it is a terrible situation that happened. But I think these are isolated incidences. I mean, we're seeing that this is not widespread, that there are very small percentage of law enforcement that engage in this kind of thing. But I think that we do need, I agree with Rob, we do need to have reforms. We need to have the rules and regulations clear, and when there are violations of that, the process needs to be transparent, and those who abuse those laws absolutely need to be held accountable. But I think that we need to be very, very careful that we don't use this as a widespread effort that would work against the law enforcement officers who are doing their best to do their jobs. In many cases, these are dangerous individuals. And I think you just have to have there's a very thin line there. And I think that you have to be very careful in the reforms that you put into place, because we still have to have the rule of law. We still have to be able to have things in place to restrict and restrain dangerous individuals. But again, there needs to be processes in place. And I agree with Rob that we do need some reforms.
I'll just say I agree that we need to be very careful about it, but I would disagree that this is an isolated problem. This is happening every day across our country in venue after venue. It's been happening this way for years. It's why African-American people find themselves having to have the talk with their children as they reach maturity to tell them about how they will have to interact with law enforcement officers different than white people do. I mean, it's just a horrific reality of life in modern America, and it is not just an isolated problem. It is an epidemic, if you will, and it's something that desperately needs addressing throughout North Carolina and throughout the country.
Finally, mail-in ballots. As of this morning, about 145,000 have been requested across our state. According to an analysis by Catawba College political science professor Michael Bitzer, that is almost seven times as many as were requested at this time in 2016. And a federal judge upheld requirements this week for a witness signature and the mail-in deadline. Judge William Osteen dismissed most of what voting advocates were seeking in a lawsuit, but did rule that voters should get a second chance to fix any issues in order to have their vote counted. Rob, pleased or frustrated with this ruling?
Both. I mean, I do think that the plaintiffs made a good case that there were more actions that should have been taken and should have been required by the Constitution in truly making the ballot accessible to people. That said, this ruling is a very important one. This particular aspect of the judge's ruling that will make it possible for probably literally hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians to cure errors in their ballots is of great importance. We know that the Trump administration has been doing everything it can to undermine mail-in voting. They've appointed this fellow out of Greensboro, who's now the postmaster general, who has been taking actions really to slow down the Postal Service. He's been giving money to the Republican committee as they sue states that move to mail-in voting. So there are grave concerns about mail-in voting working well. And so anything that we can do to make sure that people will be notified if their ballot is rejected. And I believe in the primary, something like 100 or 280,000 were rejected, and as many as 40% of those could have been cured, according to analysis from the Southern Coalition for Social Justice. So it's a big deal, and it should go a long way towards hopefully making the election one in which more people participate and have a say.
Well, I'm not surprised at all at the number of mail-in ballots that we've had requested already. I think as we continue with the restrictions across North Carolina, people continue to deal with the COVID-19. There's still a lot of uncertainty around the election of, you know, what are those in-person ballot places, voting places going to look like? They're talking about here in Raleigh about maybe using the PNC Center in Charlotte. They're talking about using some of the big sports arenas, you know, to do that. I think there's enough uncertainty there that for a lot of folks, they're requesting the mail-in ballots, just kind of let me go ahead and get that and see what my options are as I get closer to the election. So I think it's great that we have that. We've always had that here in North Carolina, the no-excuse mail-in absentee ballots, and I think that's a good thing. I think that the court ruling, I was pleased that they upheld that you have a witness signature. That just seems to be a reasonable safeguard to have with it. I think you have to have deadlines as to when you return your ballot. I think all of those rules need to be set out so that people understand and they have the trust and the integrity of moving forward with the election, have enough time to learn what the rules are. You know, we are, 90 days away from Election Day, and of course, early voting starts sooner than that. So I think the sooner that we get all these rules in place, the better, and people have, again, have the confidence and the integrity. I think this second chance to go back and fix your ballot, I'm very skeptical of that. It seems to me that when you fill out your ballot, there is a responsibility that you have to fill out the ballot as you choose to. Then you submit that, you know, to be counted. And I think the second, to be able to go back and change things just does not seem like a good idea to me. But as we go forward with this, and then depending on what county you live in, what those rules look like as we get closer to it, I think it's a very good thing that we are going ahead and getting the rules and regulations in place, the parameters, the process, so people understand what their options are and how to go about doing that. I think the more people that vote on Election Day, the better.
I agree. It's good to have lots of people vote. I don't think that this ruling, though, is about people changing their minds or changing their ballots. It's about people who've had their ballots rejected because they made the wrong kind of mark or did something to that effect. And that's the kind of thing that seems to me utterly reasonable that we'd want to facilitate it. It's confusing to a lot of people. You're going to be doing this, many people, for the very first time. And it just seems to me an obvious thing that we want to make it, you know, we don't want people not voting because of some stupid mistake that they just couldn't read the instructions properly. So I think that's what this is more about.
Well, and the sooner that we get those instructions laid out, the sooner that people have them and are able to review them and again, present their ballot with the confidence that the integrity of the system will be in place, I think is, you know, that's what we all want.
And I believe that mail-in ballots will begin going out in less than a month. It's September 4th that the State Board of Elections will begin sending those to individuals who have requested them. You have until mid-October to register to vote if you're not registered. And you can request a mail-in ballot up until, I believe, it's October 27th of this year. You'd have to have it in the mail by Election Day, but you can request one up until October 27th. So just a couple of nuts and bolts there. Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Have a good weekend. Thanks.
A truncated version of the conversation with Becky and Rob airs on good old terrestrial radio each Friday afternoon, 10 minutes of 5 on WUNC during All Things Considered. Glad to have you along. As always, good of you to check out the pod. If you are not caught up on other WUNC podcasts, you should think about doing it. Tested, Creep, Embodied. You can get segments of The State of Things wherever it is that you do that on-demand listening. Look forward to chatting with you again next week. We'll drop a conversation with former four-term governor of North Carolina, Jim Hunt. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Can you say W?
Sure.
U.
N.
N.
C.
C.
Bye.
Bye.